and welcome to Bear Soup with Ron Suresha. That's me, your furry-chested host, casting my pod to you through the magic of the internet, actually from New London, Connecticut, USA. We have a brilliant program for you today, so settle down and listen up, bears. First, a special report on Turkish bear activist who was shot as an honor killing, Ahmet Yildiz, including audio from a YouTube video memorial. Ahmet is my family. A reading from the book, Fairies, Bears, and Leathermen, Men in Community Querying the Masculine, by Peter Hennen. Ben & Jerry's renaming its legendary flavor to Hubby Hubby. Fake Jelly Bean Manly Flavors. Shoutouts and more. So, stay tuned. You're just in time for Bear Soup. Ahmet Yildiz, I believe it's pronounced, I'll spell that, A-H-M-E-T-Y-I-L-D-I-Z. We have a special report on Ahmet Yildiz, a Turkish bear activist who was shot as an honor killing, including audio from a memorial video. We get the first part of this story from The Independent. Then there's breaking news this week on the arraignment of Ahmet's missing father. I'll comment after the two articles on the incidence of bisexuality, as well as virulent homophobia in practically all Muslim cultures. An article in The Independent, dated July 19, 2008, entitled, Was Ahmet Yildiz the Victim of Turkey's First Gay Honor Killing? By Nicholas Birch. In a corner of Istanbul today, the man who might be described as Turkey's gay poster boy will be buried. A victim, his friends believe, of the country's deepening friction between an increasingly liberal society and its entrenched conservative traditions. Ahmet Yildiz, 26, a physics student who represented his country at an international gay gathering in San Francisco last year, was shot, leaving a cafe near the Bosphorus Strait this week. Fatally wounded, the student tried to flee the attackers in his car, but lost control, crashed at the side of the road, and died shortly afterwards in a hospital. His friends believe Mr. Yildiz was the victim of the country's first gay honor killing. He fell victim to a war between old mentalities and growing civil liberties, says Sidif Chakmak, a friend and a member of the gay rights lobby group Lambda. Quote, I feel helpless. We are trying to raise awareness of gay rights in this country, but the more visible we become, the more we open ourselves up to this sort of attack. End quote. Turkey was all but closed to the world until 1980, but its desire for EU membership has imposed strains on a society formerly kept on a tight leash, as the notion of rights for minorities, such as women and gays, has blossomed. The country's civil society becomes more vibrant by the day. But the changes have brought a backlash from traditionalist circles wedded to the old regime. Bungled efforts by a religious-minded government to loosen the grip of Turkey's authoritarian version of secularism have triggered a court case aimed at shutting the ruling party down, with a verdict expected within a month. Against this backdrop, the issues of women's rights, sexuality, and the place of religion in the public arena have been particularly contentious. Ahmet Yildiz's crime, his friends say, was to admit openly to his family that he was gay. From the day I met him, I never heard Ahmet have a friendly conversation with his parents, one close friend and near neighbor recounted. They would argue constantly, mostly about where he was, who he was with, what he was doing. The family pressure increased, the friend explained. They wanted him to go back home, see a doctor who could cure him, and get married. Shortly after coming out this year, Mr. Yildiz went to a prosecutor to complain that he was receiving death threats. The case was dropped. 5 months later, he was dead. The police are now investigating his murder. for gay rights groups. The students' inability to get protection was a typical byproduct of the indifference, if not hostility, with which a broad swath of Turkish society views homosexuality. The military, for example, sees it as an illness. Men applying for an exemption to obligatory military service on grounds of homosexuality must provide proof, either in the form of an anal examination or photographs. The media ignores or laughs off violence against gays, says Buse Kilichkaya, a member of the gay lobbying group Pink Life, adding that Ahmet Yıldız's death risks being swept under the carpet and forgotten like other cases in the past. Turkey has a history of honor killings. A government survey earlier this year estimated that one person every week dies in Istanbul as a result of honor killings. It put the nationwide death toll at 220 in 2007. In the majority of cases, the victims are women, but Mr. Yıldız's friends suspect that he may be the first recorded victim of a homosexual honor killing. We've been trying to contact Ahmet's family since Wednesday to get them to take responsibility for the funeral, one of the victim's friends said yesterday, standing outside the morgue where his body has been for 3 days. There's no answer, and I don't think they are going to come. The refusal of families to bury their relatives is common after honor-related murders. Majar Bagli, a Turkish sociologist who has interviewed 189 people convicted of honor killings, has never heard of a death revolving around homosexuality, but has no doubt that it could be used as justification. Honor killings cleanse illicit relationships. For women, that is a broad term. Men are allowed more sexual freedom, but homosexuality is still seen by some as beyond the pale. While his death may be unique, Mr. Yıldız is by no means the first victim of widespread homophobia. When an Istanbul court decided to close down the city's largest gay rights group late this May, commentators took the decision as evidence of a crackdown on the community spearheaded by Turkey's current religious-minded government. Lambda Istanbul has been taken to court by the Istanbul governor's office on the grounds that it was against the law and morality. However, many gay activists are reluctant to draw a connection with the ruling Justice and Development Party, noting it was the first party in Turkey's history to send a deputy to attend a conference on gay rights. This year's gay pride parade in Istanbul was the largest ever, they also point out. Long active in more liberal parts of Western Turkey, gay groups are even beginning to meet relatively openly in the conservative east of the country, where Ahmet Yıldız came from. But, according to his former neighbor, the physics student's blank refusal to hide who he was in any way may have been too much for his family. He could have hidden who he was, but he wanted to live honestly, the neighbor said. When the death threats started, his boyfriend tried to persuade him to get out of Turkey, but he stayed. He was too brave. He was too open. What follows is the audio from a YouTube video memorial PSA, Ahmet is my family, posted to Ahmet Yıldız is my family.blogspot.com. There's a link on my website.
Hello, my name is Ed Caraballo from New York City. And Ahmet was part of my family.
Kaixo, Joseba naiz, Euskal Herriko semea, eta Ahmet nere familia da.
I'm Alex from Barcelona.
Hello, my name is Ron. I'm from Florida.
My name is Graham, and I'm from Brisbane, Australia.
My name is Mike from Louisiana in the United States.
My name is Stephen Curtis from London, Ontario, Canada.
Ahmet is my family.
And Ahmet is my family.
Bonjour, je suis français, et Ahmet est ma famille.
And Ahmet is my family.
And Ahmet was part of my family.
Ahmet is mi familia.
And Ahmet is my family.
Hola, soy Salvador de Barcelona, Ahmet es mi familia.
And Ahmet is my family.
Hola, me llamo Jaime, soy de Chile, y Ahmet es mi familia.
And Ahmet was
was part of my family.
Breaking news on Ahmet's accused killer, his father, from Europe News on monstersandcritics.com. An article dated September 8th, 2009, entitled "Turkish Father Goes on Trial Over Son's Gay Honor Killing." A Turkish father accused of murdering his homosexual son in a so-called honor killing went on trial in the Üsküdar municipality of Istanbul Tuesday. Yahya Yildiz, 49, who is on the run and is being tried in absentia, is accused of shooting his 26-year-old son, Ahmed, in June 2008 after the latter told him about his relationship with a man from Cologne in Germany. Human rights organizations were monitoring the start of the case after complaints were made that Turkish courts did not make enough effort to prosecute in cases where homosexuals were murdered. İbrahim Kan, the victim's German-Turkish boyfriend, demanded that those who had helped the murderer also be prosecuted, but he said, quote, "My expectations from the trial are minimal," unquote. The prosecution claims the family had not accepted the son's homosexuality. Ahmed, who was about to complete his training as a physics teacher, had been threatened as a result. The father had hired a car for the murder, which was seen at the scene of the crime. His mobile phone records showed that he was in the area where the murder took place, the prosecution said. A nearby resident was also shot in the attack. She is a joint plaintiff in the case. One of the things I've taken particular interest in over the past few years in my studies of male bisexuality, as well as my ongoing interest in Eastern studies and Eastern cultures, is the discovery, as the West has invaded the Middle East and exposed Muslim culture, we have come to find that closeted homosexuality, bisexuality, perhaps, is very common among fundamentalist Muslim countries. In fact, there's an article in the anthology that I edited this year entitled "Bisexual Perspectives on the Life and Work of Alfred C. Kinsey" that specifically examines the open secret of the Pashtun tribe in Afghanistan. The men are commonly married and also have young male sexual partners. Certainly we can see that in the face of fundamentalist religion, that living as an open, proud, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex, or queer person is risky at best and fatal at worst. We'll be keeping an eye on this story here at Bear Soup. Here's a selection from the book Fairies, Bears, and Leathermen, subtitled "Men in Community Queering the Masculine" by Peter Hennin, an assistant professor of sociology at The Ohio State University at Newark. I wanted to read to you from the chapter on Bear Bodies, Bear Masculinity, the section "What is a Bear?" As is the case with fairy identity, a certain tension between fluidity and fixity is reflected in the identity narratives generated in bear cultures. Wright, 1997, asserts that, quote, "Since the term bear is applied in a self-defining manner, it is vaguely defined, sometimes in self-contradicting ways, and is interpreted variously," unquote. But it seems that these definitions of bear vary within a fairly well-defined field, one that is heavily influenced by gender. It has never been, as Wright suggests below, a matter of bear identity as a kind of tabula rasa, upon which each bear man inscribes his own particular meanings. He quotes from Les Wright. The underlying theoretical starting point is the notion of a bear, as Sarsourian or Barthian empty signifier. Each self-identifying bear over the last 10 years has filled in his own definition and meaning, from the experiential base of gay male subjectivities the gay mass media has taken over, selling to the bears consumable, standardized images of real bears, and broadcasting these images and attendant values to society at large. The political shift has been from anarchic to authoritarian. Unquote. Les Wright. It seems that the very anarchism that Wright nostalgically invokes here is itself gendered. It brings to mind Lucy Smith's 1991 comment about the bear's refusal to, quote, come indoors at once and wash behind his ears, unquote, and resonates with the long history of masculinist anxieties regarding the feminizing effects of civilization outlined in the previous section. Elsewhere, Wright acknowledges the central role of masculinity in bear identity when he offers his own definition of bear as a, quote, gay man who is as comfortable being a man as he is being gay and who has a good heart, unquote. Jack Fritcher exhibits this same tendency toward defining bear as an indeterminate identity that is nevertheless profoundly structured by gender. Quoted in Bears on Bears. Bear is a concept so receptively blank that, as a label, it welcomes and absorbs all masculine fantasies, fetishes, identities, and body types. Bear is all-inclusive. For some of my interview subjects, questions of definition devolved to intuition. As Don says, quote, you know, it's a little, gosh, it's one of those things you have to just experience, I guess, and understand, unquote. Bert concurs when he says, quote, I don't think that there's a real definition, unquote. Yet this fluid, ineffable quality of bareness is in sharp contrast with some of the definitions I gleaned from other subjects who had little trouble with definition. Quote, a bear to me is someone who, quote, unquote, has a potbelly, unquote, says Don. Quote, I would say, physically, I would say at least facial hair, beard, mustache, and personality-wise, natural, down-to-earth, unquote, from Larry. Quote, I would say stockier, definitely hairy, either facial hair, hairy chest, probably a little bit older, unquote, says Grant. Final quote, this is my personal opinion. The majority of people base what a bear is based on, I think, more physical looks than anything else, obviously, unquote, from Travis. Another prominent feature of bear culture is the proliferation and fetishization of typologies deployed to capture various aspects of bear identity. There is, first of all, a general typology that divides bear men into various categories by elaborating the bear analogy and even extending it to other animals. Bears, the default category, but sometimes used in a more specific sense to indicate sexual dominance and a more independent attitude. Cubs, used to indicate a playfulness and youthful attitude that is not necessarily tied to age, but may be associated with a smaller body frame. Cubbishness usually signals sexual submissiveness. Daddy bears, the dominant partner of a cub. Grizzlies, more mature and demanding bears. Polar bears, which are older bears with white or gray hair. Otters, thin-framed and smooth. And wolves, thin-framed and hairy. While I found that these categories are widely recognized within bear communities, I also heard a variety of definitions for each from my interview subjects. There seemed to be general agreement as to the physical characteristics corresponding to each category, but less agreement on the attitudinal correlates of each. In addition to this detailed typology, there is a second very popular method of categorizing bears known as the bear code. Similar in some respects to computer code, the use of the bear code reflects both an instrumental attitude towards self-description and the culture's close association with computer technology and internet communication. Here, bears assess themselves along a variety of dimensions and assign a quantitative measure, ranging from plus plus to minus minus, in reference to their various physical and personality characteristics, including bear type, fur or body hair, height, included as the tallness factor, weight, cubbishness, daddy tendencies, the grope factor, how much one likes to be pawed, the kinky factor, for those who dare, degree of monogamy practiced in relationships, amount of muscle mass, endowment or penis size, the bear factor, that's BEHR, specifically for those men who do not have beards to indicate what other forms of facial hair they may have, and the rugged/outdoor factor. Although the use of the bear code seems to have declined somewhat in recent years, the fact that it was ever taken seriously is somewhat ironic, as authors Donahue and Stoner claim to have developed the bear code as a joke. Furthermore, while in the field, I observed a wide degree of variance in identity investment. A minority of those who attend bear events probably do not identify as bears at all. A larger segment self-identify as bears, but beyond cultivating the traditional bear look, it is not an important part of their self-presentation. But for another large segment of the community, more deliberate signaling seems to indicate a deeper investment in bear identity. For example, while at bear camp, I saw a number of vanity license plates with bear themes, such as cub, little cub, woofy, and bear seeker. T-shirts included slogans such as Motor City Bears, Bear Patrol, I Have the Body of a God, Unfortunately It's Buddha, Got Fur, advertising the Lone Star Saloon, Bear Pride 2001, from the annual Memorial Day celebration in Chicago, a cartoon of an anthropomorphized bear on another Gay Pride t-shirt, and several hats with various bear images on them. Bear paw tattoos are popular with some, especially younger bears. I asked Travis, in his early 20s, about his new tattoo. I got my bear paw tattoo in September. I always wanted to get one, specifically also because I saw a lot of other guys that had them. And you know, I'm normally somebody who doesn't like to do what everybody else does, but when it came to the bear paw, I think to some people it almost is considered, I don't want to say rite of passage, but it all seems that way, that getting your bear paw tattoo almost makes it in some ways, quote-unquote, official, unquote. When I asked Don if he had any bear paraphernalia in his apartment, he laughed and told me of his extensive collection, which includes the head of a real bear stuffed and mounted. Quote, I mean, it's one of those, yeah, they can't help but notice. I mean, there's a big, huge polar bear head right in the front of the door when you walk in. Actually, you know, I put it on the patio to scare the squirrels away for a bit. It's just a big old polar bear head, laughs. He also told me of his hopes for expanding the collection. Quote, yeah, I go out there and buy certain objects with bears. I mean, I'll be honest, there's a Baccarat bear sitting in a nearby shop, you know. I walk by when I go to Starbucks, and it's like, I want that. And it's just, you know, just really an ice crystal polar bear. So, who has $300 to buy a crystal polar bear? Unquote. So, he laughs. Brian introduces an essentialist element when I asked him about such extensive collections, attributing the impulse to an innate bear-loving spirit. Quote, I think it's funny because you coincidentally will hear people talk about, there are lots of guys in the bear group who sort of collected bears and teddy bears and stuff like that long before they knew, you know, long before they would have even known or before the bear group even started anywhere. I've been reading from What is a Bear? Chapter 4 of the book Fairies, Bears, and Leathermen, Men and Community Queering the Masculine, by Peter Hennin, from University of Chicago Press. You can find a link to purchase the book from my website, On September 1st, Ben & Jerry's announced that it was renaming its legendary flavor, Chubby Hubby, to celebrate freedom to marry. In a statement, they said, Ben & Jerry's, known for its euphoric ice cream flavors and dedication to social justice, celebrates the beginning of the freedom to marry for gay and lesbian couples in Vermont with a symbolic renaming of its well-known ice cream flavor, Chubby Hubby, to Hubby Hubby. In partnership with Freedom to Marry, Ben & Jerry's aims to raise awareness of the importance of marriage equality and, to show its support, will serve Hubby Hubby Sundays in Vermont scoop shops throughout the month of September. Ben & Jerry's has a long history of commitment to social justice, including gay rights. Its partnership with Freedom to Marry, a national leader in the movement for marriage equality, aims to raise awareness of the importance of marriage equality and encourages other states to follow. Here's a quote. It's not polite to talk with your mouth full, but the most important thing that all of us ice cream lovers can do to support the Freedom to Marry is speak with the people we know about why marriage matters and the need to end marriage discrimination in every state, said Evan Wolfson, executive director of Freedom to Marry. Thanks to Ben & Jerry's, starting those needed conversations has never been sweeter. Thanks to Freedom to Marry, we all now have a great excuse to eat more ice cream. For more information on why marriage equality matters and to take action in your state, please log on to freetomarry, that's freedtomarry.org, to find your local Ben & Jerry's scoop shop or to learn more about Ben & Jerry's social mission, log on to their website, www.benjerry.com. Yum, yum, yum.
BTW. FYI, WTF, OMG, GTK.
And in a related vein, manly flavors. There is a parody advertisement going around of Jelly Belly flavors, listed here as Manly Flavors by Manoverse.com, M-A-N-O-V-E-R-S-E.com. And the color advertisement you have to see, but let me tell you the names of some of their manly flavors, because the colors all match perfectly. They're kind of too much. Tobacco. Coolant. Rattlesnake, groin pull, beer, shrapnel, steak, war medal, stripper, gravy, boobs, hot wings, jerky, burrito, pain, leather, chili dog, gunpowder, boot, asphalt, drippins, headbutt, freedom, gravel, pork, panther, car part, whiskey, blood, and the last of the fake Jelly Belly manly flavors, fear. Scott and Mike of BearSoup.com, The Merman, Joe of the Bear Radio Network, Kendall, Obama Free the Gays on Facebook, The Tall Gals. Well, that's really quite more than enough for this week. Please check out the Bear Soup page on my website, www.ronsurasha.com. That's R-O-N-S-U-R-E-S-H-A. Bear Soup is news, opinions, stories, and interviews for the bear community with bear author and editor Ron Surasha. Bubbles for the Bear Soup hot tub are powered by our sponsor, Bare Bones Books. Please check out their fine titles by bear authors at barebonesbooks.com. BEARBONESBOOKS.com. No rubber duckies or woodland creatures were harmed in the making of this podcast. That's it for this week on Bear Soup, episode number 53. Thanks for tuning your furry ears here to Bear Soup.